I would like to bring before you Reverend Carol Boyer, my friend and a true inspiration. So please give her a welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Diana. The Reverend Carol Boyer, that always cracks me up because when I was growing up, you didn't call people Reverend. Only God was Reverend. And then I discovered, well, I am Reverend, and you're Reverend, and we're all so very sacred and blessed and holy. So I don't know why. I guess we have to have some title for some things or something, but yeah. Let's just take a moment to relax into our reverendness. Get comfy for a minute. If it feels good, close your eyes. Relax into your seat. And if your eyes are closed, enjoy that little bit of darkness. As you take a nice deep breath and release it, sink a little further into that darkness. A darkness of kind of a cozy space. A place to be safe and still and present. A darkness that is rich, like the beautiful voice we heard singing that Thanksgiving song. Velvety, sacred, enveloping, supportive. Nurturing. And slip into that place within. For you are fully you. A space of silence. And let's just rest there a moment. Feel the comfort of the release of tension, of the need to be a certain way. Knowing that you as you are is enough, which allows us to be fully present with everything. As we heard in the reading, aware, vibrantly alive, centered and at peace. As you bring your awareness back into this room, feeling yourself in your chair, maybe opening your eyes. Allow yourself to maintain that sense of presence and safety. And an awareness of that center of gravity of your own being. So my talk tonight was titled Center of Gravity because they call you up and say, we need a title. And something is trying to be birthed in this that wasn't part of my plan, so I don't really know where this is going to go. But I don't feel too worried about it, because if it insists on coming forth, well, then it's responsible for the outcome, so. But understanding center of gravity is important. Maintaining our balance requires a connection with our center of gravity. I think in the last month, a lot of people have been thrown off their center. We discovered that the center of gravity for our country was maybe not where a lot of people thought it was. And so we have to be present with that, fully here with what is. So the center of gravity of our country may be not where we thought it was. What does that do to me? What does that do to my sense of being and presence? And it doesn't matter if it was about an election. It doesn't matter if it has something to do with something's happening in my family, a concern I have. If I'm being thrown off my center of gravity, I have to make the decision to find it again, to come back to center. You know, I can make this choice of reacting out of habit and automatic responses, which are actually reactions, or I can choose a response. We talk a lot here about choice, about always being able to choose my response. And what I wanted to talk about had to do with using a particular cosmology to help me choose my responses. You know, we're entering this time of darkness, this rich, beautiful, almost textured time of the year, where we can be wrapped in kind of a safe, nurturing space if we choose to see it that way. And I think that's a good time to kind of revisit the sacred feminine, to think about the feminine aspect. You know, I have a personal history with this time of year that's a little different. As I was growing up, the church we were in did not celebrate Christmas because it was pagan. So we didn't recognize this or celebrate this as a time of Jesus' birth. But we kept the biblical holy days and had the idea that he would have been actually born in the fall on Rosh Hashanah. That's a day of loud sounds. Trumpets sound. It's something to celebrate. Hey, here comes somebody. Here's somebody important. Well, as I think about this, you know, it's kind of funny because with those holy days, we're in a church that was very hierarchical and patriarchal. If you are familiar with Judaism, it tends to be very patriarchal. And it's so ironic that all of those observances are tied to the moon. They're tied to the earth and the harvest, all very feminine symbology. And so I just find that a little funny and ironic. But I always thought of, okay, so if Jesus, the perfect manifestation of the Christ self here on earth, was born in the fall, If I go back 9 months, that brings me to the middle of winter. That brings me to that dark time that's so perfect for conception. It's cold, it's dark, nobody wants to go out. Even the celebration of the sun that was part of the pagan symbolism, that was an embryonic sun on that day after the solstice. Yes, the day got a little longer, but only got this much longer. The full birth comes much later when it's in all its glory in the summer solstice. So I always think of this as a time of conception, like a new moon, a time to begin, a time for planting a seed, or a seed that has been planted, because our winter wheat that got planted in the fall is going to sit here. Those tulip bulbs and daffodil bulbs that I planted this past month are there waiting, carefully nurtured in the soil, in the darkness, for a reason, in the womb of the earth, nurtured by the mother, in order to grow and bring forth and manifest later. And for some reason, this just really matters to me, to think about that feminine aspect, that dark, moist, receptive, constricting, nurturing, formative component. Maybe it's because I feel like I'm off center. I've lost my center of gravity. One of the things I like about the fellowship is this welcoming of different cosmologies. So I grew up with a Christian cosmology of a certain kind. I think from the history of the fellowship, it was formed in order to explore the cosmology of A Course in Miracles when others weren't quite ready for it. The mystical aspect of religions, that direct connection with divine, is what always draws me. And with my history of those Jewish celebrations, we only kept the ones from April to October. There was nothing in the winter. There was nothing in the winter because you were at home trying to stay warm, right? In the Bible, there's nothing. Now, there's Hanukkah, but that was much later. That's post-biblical. But I was really drawn to that feminine, mystical component of a lot of religions that we've studied, and the one for Judaism is Kabbalah. And one of the beauties of Kabbalah is that in spite of the patriarchal, misogynistic approach to a lot of the teachers, its whole point is to bring into balance the masculine and the feminine. And not just to bring it into balance in our thought processes or in some esoterical way, but to bring it from the esoteric through these processes into the physical, into time and space consciousness, which, interestingly enough, is the pinnacle of feminine manifestation, the Shekinah glory. When you look at the cosmology of the Kabbalah, it starts with the Ein Sof Or, this unformed suchness, the absolute. And then that suchness wanted to experience itself. And that desire created a contraction, a void. Through a series of contractions and expansions, God's form was revealed as a lightning flash that manifested 10 points of light, vessels of light, that are called in this cosmology Sephira. That actually is equated with the word sapphire. They're gems, or their vessels, or their spiritual energy flows. Now, all this sounds real out there, right? But that energy gets transformed and transmuted, just like the transformers out on our telephone, our power lines rather, brought down to a level that can exist with us without blowing us right out of the water. And the nice thing about it is it comes down in a way that is balanced. And it kind of is in three columns: a masculine, a feminine, and a center that brings it all together and makes it work. So that right column, that masculine, that's assertive, that's expansive, that's a great idea. That left column is receptive and constricting. Well, let's take that idea and see if we can't do something with it. The middle column is the center of gravity. It brings that duality into a balance and funnels the desired results into the world for us. And I really love the way it connects with new thought, because the it really relates well. One of the books I've studied with regard to the Kabbalah is Practical Kabbalah by Rabbi Label Wolf. I heard him speak at MSU a few years ago. Very interesting person and very interesting writer. And I like what he says. He said, "The world doesn't change of its own volition. Our personal transformation alters the shape of the cosmos, not the other way around. We're responsible for affecting change in the cosmos, and it is profoundly enabling when one comes to truly understand that the cosmos seeks our well-being." That's just so new thought. And we get to choose. We get to choose what it is we're going to do, what our thoughts are going to be. Are we going to react or respond? And in new thought, there's this tendency to focus on the light. We want to bring light into the world. But in a world of duality, we have to embrace both: the light of insight, the darkness of the formative womb that brings forth the product that can do something in this world. The light that actually gives birth to the Christ in us on a daily basis, but that's beautifully represented by the conception that we can experience in this dark time right now. So I'm going to talk a little bit about those different sephira, those different vessels. So over here on the right, up here we've got this unformed everything suchness, Brahma, whatever. Lots of names for that, right? Can't describe it, ineffable. Then there's this vessel at the crown of our head where, that starts to come down in a different form, but it's so ephemeral still that it's hard to talk about in everyday language. So let's step down for another transformer on those power lines. And we find a vessel called Chokmah. It's also known as wisdom. It's force. It's insight. Have you ever had a thought, "Oh, this is a great idea," and then before you can do anything with it, it's gone, and you're like, "Oh man, what was that? That was so good." But it didn't quite form. And a lot of times it's when you're in your studies or you're talking about meaningful spiritual things, or you're meditating, and then, but it's gone before you can catch it. It's like the magician's wand. An intention, an insight, but if you don't grab it, it's gone. The nice thing is we can choose what we're going to grab right there. We can go fishing. Instead of just letting them come and go, we can choose, okay, I'm going to pay attention. Maybe I'll have a notebook, or maybe I'll just try to hold on to the thoughts that come to me before they get away from me. And I can choose, and I can go fishing. I'll have the thought of, "This election came out horribly for me. I hate this. The world's going to end." Or I can have the thought of, I've just discovered something I didn't know about a lot of people that I interact with on a regular basis. What can I do with that? How can I let that inform my relationships?
If I like that one, I'll keep it. If not, I'll throw it back like that fish I don't want. But I can't keep it here. I have to let it flow over here to the feminine component known as Bina, so that it can become a cogent thought, an actual thought, not just an impulse. And all of this is just up here in the mind, right? And I've got something in the middle that's going to bring them together. So I have some wisdom, and I have some understanding, but there's something called da'at that's going to bring them together and give me knowledge. And I don't mean knowledge as in facts. I mean knowledge as in he knew her, in the biblical sense. Experience, an experiential knowledge, and it's part of me knowledge. I know it because I feel it, not because somebody said it. Does that make sense? This is all part of mind process. So now I've got this knowledge. So I have this idea that there's this person that is in need, they don't have enough money. I don't really think too much about it unless I grab it over here and say, wait a minute, that's important. And then I bring it together and I have a sense of a real awareness of that. That same process that brings those two together brings that from here down to here into my emotional awareness. Internally, I have this emotion. Oh, I want to do something. Oh, we got to do something for these people. Let's just wipe out, we could wipe out all their debts. We got to do something for them. But over here is the feminine saying, well, yeah, but what should that look like? We can't go and dump a load of money on these people. So I've got internalized emotions about this. I have these thought processes. I have these internalized emotions. And in the middle, it has to harmonize. Let me find my note, my little blurb on that. What harmonizes those two emotional impulses is something called Tefirit. It provides a harmonizing influence. It blends Hesed and Gevurah, which are the two emotional impulses, into compassion. Again, I'm talking the center column. I'm talking the middle way, my center of gravity. Not an impulse, not a resistance, but bringing those two together into compassion. Compassion arises when we choose to give despite circumstances that might not warrant it. A judge may weigh circumstances and choose compassion over harsh judgment. Parents who understand their child's disruptive behavior as a result of emotional upheaval may choose to be compassionate rather than punitive. A benefactor may be compassionate in the contribution to a man who has poor financial management skills yet struggles to overcome limitations. So we have an impulse of giving, of outward. We have an impulse of withdrawing to create an actual useful response. But so far, all we've had is thoughts and internal emotions. And now, another transformer. We come down into actual external emotions where I reach out. I reach out to you. I understand you're having difficulty. But what if I reach out to you and say, oh, I'm so sorry, I heard all about your problems and I'm going to fix them for you. I've got this idea and that idea. It's a great way to scare somebody away, right? But if I will go over to the feminine and let that desire to help flow and help me limit that process of reach out, step back, create a withdrawing where there's space. It creates a space. It's one of the things that the feminine process does. It creates a space so I can hear you. I don't flood you with my enthusiasm. I hear you. I hear your need. And again, it has to come back to center. To something called yesod, which is a bonding function. It allows this impulse of giving and this function of creating space to hear you come together and let me bond with you emotionally. I've created now an external expression of emotion. And the pinnacle of this comes down to the sephira that is called Malkut, where all of this gets funneled into an action. It gets funneled into an expression of who we are, because who we are is revealed in what we do. And what we do, oftentimes, instead of in these three sephirot of mind and three sephirot of internal emotion, they come from the three sephirot of external emotion, because those emotions are expressed in the body. Have you ever? Well, of course you have. You know those moments when you remember something that you forgot that was really important to somebody, and you felt that drop in your tummy, and you, oh, sick, I know I've let them down, oh, no. Or you were terrified. Somebody almost ran in front of you in your car as you're driving down the road, and you almost had an accident, and you can feel that. You can feel it in your throat. You can feel it in your stomach. Our emotions are expressed in our bodies, and we have body memories that draw us into routine reactions. We go down a path, the same old path we've always gone down, which might be to run out and give somebody money if they need it, or it might be to say, get a job, dude, seriously, take care of your stuff. Neither of which may be appropriate, though sometimes each may be. Or if somebody's asking me for something and it reminds me of my great aunt Bertha, who was always so mean to me, and my natural response to her was to run and hide or to snap back, then I'm going to have that automatic response. But if I've started up here and I've chosen the thought, I went fishing, I used my magician's wand for the thought that feels better, and I've run it through my balancing process so that I'm standing in the middle ground, then I can express something useful instead of just getting in an argument with my family about what just happened in November. And since Beth talked about what can you do now last week, maybe this can be a useful process for determining it, a process to go through to find out, okay, am I thinking this through? Am I guiding this with the proper direction? Am I coming back together to bring all of this to express something that's really an expression of who I am? Because who I am is expressed in what I do. Wrong book. I was about to read out of the wrong book. Without this final vessel that expresses all of this in the world, we would just possess thoughts and feelings and never actualize them. Taking action matters. You're not going to plan a summer vacation by buying tickets, packing your clothes, and then sitting at home waiting for something to happen to get you there. So these flows impact human behavior, but they actually flow through the entire cosmos. So the idea of this last one, this embodiment, Malkut, it's synonymous with that feminine aspect of God that's called the Shekinah glory. And it is the Shekinah that funnels the waves of creative potential into a revealed finite world. So when we're going through this process, we're not just making decisions about what I'm going to do in terms of my neighbor or my kids or my job. We're actually creating or allowing, we're funneling an expression of divine mind and feeding back to the cosmos, letting the divine experience itself, impacting everything. Note the anthropomorphic account of creation begins with the words, "And God said, let there be light." That beautiful light of Shekinah is manifest through a physical world, but it's the highest spiritual source of our soul. I'm going to go to another place in this book. And ask that you, again, relax into your seat. And if you're comfortable, close your eyes. And consider this with me. The cosmos elicits inner truths from us by offering up challenges upon which we can grow in wisdom. The mystics of Kabbalah teach that just as the grape produces wine when pressed, and the olive produces oil when pounded, so should we, when challenged, come forth with wisdom. But wisdom requires that we approach life with faith, discipline, and an open mind. Sometimes life appears to be like a journey through a desert of greed, insecurity, and fear. But we can choose what we see. In the seemingly inert desert, life teems beneath the dry sands. Wait for night to fall and you will discover the nocturnal fauna. Look in the right places and you will find determined flora. And beneath the surface flow subterranean streams of living waters. Similarly, the same people who grasp, withhold, threaten, also possess an inner core of goodness that seeks the light of day. Each of us has the potential to share our insight and guidance and to elicit it from others. But first, we must find the wisdom within ourselves. So let's just take a moment to go back into that dark space. To find the wisdom within ourselves so that we are able to see the wisdom within each other no matter what the surface looks like. Go into the dark, into the deep. Meet the Divine Mother in the nurturing of the seed of your soul that brings forth the Christ child in you in due time. Embrace that darkness. Don't rob the light of the dark, for she is his beloved, giving birth to Christ in you. I invite you to carry that thought and that image with you into this holiday season. Thank you.